Sadibon. Welcome from South Africa. It is what is January 3rd? A wonderful new year to all of you. May this be the most blissful, ecstatic new year yet in Krishna consciousness. New year yet. A lot of you who are on Krishna.com don't know that we're doing a. All our chat goes on Krishna.com's chat site. So, Guru Nishtha, can you put the address on Mayapur.tv so people can see that? I was mentioning on the chat, if you're on Krishna.com, I was mentioning, if you're on Mayapur TV and not on Krishna.com chat, I was mentioning how here the other day, Bhakti Brihat Bhagavatamrita was giving class, and he was talking about how when you live in a temple, you deal with different authorities. You have somebody that, in ideal sense, an ideal temple, you'll have an ashram leader. And you'll have somebody who you work under in terms of service, perhaps a sankirtan leader, or if you're in the deity department, or whatever department you're in, you'll have somebody. And generally, you have a spiritual authority. There's someone you can go to for spiritual guidance, other than your spiritual master, because generally, in most cases, spiritual master doesn't live in the temple. That most spiritual masters, majority of them travel. And having a spiritual authority, having an ashram leader, and having a person you do service under is a great advantage. And then he also mentioned how, of course, when you live in a temple, that everybody chants their rounds together. So living outside the temple, it could be a challenge just to finish your rounds. And of course, we'll have a different schedule depending on your life style. So he was asking the question in class, I think in South Africa, well, I think in the Durban area they have 2,000 to 3,000 initiated devotees. And so he was just feeling and inquiring that everyone who's initiated may not be strictly following. And he wasn't only referring to regulative principles, but also other things, such as rising early, only eating Krishna prasadam, and so forth. And I had mentioned something that I'd never told you before, which was quite different from in the days of Prabhupada than from what it is now, and that during Prabhupada's time, we had a very small congregation. Congregation usually meant full-time devotees living within the vicinity of the temple who were also participating. So there was no real difference between devotees living in the temple and devotees living around the temple. The devotees living around the temple all lived within a block or so of the temple, walking distance, and they were all, for the most part, were following the morning program, and many of them were actually full-time devotees at the temple. The cost of living was much lower in the 70s, and some temples had enough income or to support those devotees, or many devotees could make enough money to live just by doing book distribution, because all they really needed to do was make enough money to pay their rent. Most didn't have cars, didn't need them. Temple had cars. If they needed cars, they would use the temple cars. And many of them were Sankirtan devotees anyway. So their only overhead was really their rent and utilities, and they got their prasadam from the temple. Maybe a few expenses they might have if they had children. And so it was rare for someone to get initiated who didn't live in the temple. And our understanding was, and Prabhupada actually said this, that those who take initiation who live outside are those who want to dedicate themselves to spreading the mission. And I know things have changed a little bit since then, because now we just heard that Jaya Bhattacharya has 45,000 disciples. And Prabhupada asked him to have 50,000, so that's his goal. Apparently that's his goal, I was told. Other gurus have 5,000, 7,000, 1,000, 2,000, like that. Prabhupada had 5,000, Prabhupada only had 5,000 initiated disciples. And most of whom were full-time devotees. The development of the congregation, as I said, was not very large at that time. But when someone was initiated, it was understood that they were serious and they were being initiated to help Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness. So in many ways, there wasn't a whole lot of difference between someone living outside who was initiated and someone who is living in the temple is not initiated. Now, it's true that the development of the congregation at that time was not really facilitated as it is today with Namhata or Bhakti Vriksha and so many other programs. Because there weren't that many devotees in the congregation. Congregation then mostly became Indians, who were, at least my observation was that in the West, many people would come to the temple for some time as a Western congregation, but they tended to be unsteady. Whereas the Indians tended to be steady because Indians, it was their culture. So the Indian population grew. The American population of congregation was always very small, and mostly it comprised of initiated devotees or temple devotees who later married and moved outside the temple. That was most of your Western congregation. And so most of your steady congregation became Indians, because the Western, at least this is my observation, maybe it's different today, but at least 20 years ago I was, in Prabhupada's time we really didn't have much of a congregation. And those who were in the congregation that got initiated were considered very serious, and specifically it was considered that they're getting initiated because they want to help spread Krishna consciousness, that they would do some sort of preaching, some aspect of preaching. Then I was saying that congregation was very small, and the majority of grihasthas lived within a block or two of the temple and attended the temple program and were full-time devotees. And that was normal in Prabhupada's time because the cost of living was very little, and basically their only personal expenses were rent and utilities and maybe a few small things here and there, which were all paid by the temple or paid through their collections on book distribution. And the congregation grew when a lot of our temple brahmacharis moved outside the temple and there wasn't full facility to support them. So they had to get their own jobs. And the Western congregation, from my experience in preaching, at least in America, the Western congregation was unstable in the sense that many people would come, but they wouldn't stay in Krishna consciousness. So I was doing a program. We had maybe 15 or 20 people, up to 25 in our Western congregation, but only a few were steady. A few were serious. Most were new to Krishna consciousness. Many were not even that interested, but they attended our programs. Perhaps it's changed. I think it's changed in some places, like Russia and other places where they're doing Bhakti Vriksha. But at least at that time, we didn't have a strong congregation of Western. We had a strong congregation of Indians, because Indians didn't come and go because this was their culture. So the Indian congregation grew. And the first Indian congregation that I was aware of grew in Houston, but Dhamma Krishna Maharaj initiated everyone because he wanted them to become committed. And many people in the congregation in those days never became initiated. So that was, Houston, Texas was the first place I was aware of where Indians became initiated and were the main people running the temple. So that was the mode then, that if you became initiated and you were in the congregation, that you would dedicate yourself to spreading Krishna consciousness. That and you would be very involved in the temple. And in fact, in Houston, they arranged for many of the devotees to live near the temple. So what we were beginning to say in this conversation was how in South Africa, Brihat Maharaj was talking about the challenges of living outside and the advantages that devotees had living inside. And then he mentioned that those advantages should be arranged for devotees living outside. And he said that the three advantages he saw, amongst others, but the three he mentioned were, is that you have someone that gives you service and you work with them. You have an ashram leader because you live in an ashram. And you have a spiritual authority, someone you can go to if you have problems. And so we should try to have that also. I think that's a good suggestion. So that was just something off the top of my head. Not that I was thinking of speaking about that today and developing that. But I think from that idea, one thing we can develop, at least discuss a little bit, and he was asking the question in class, which is a valid question, of how many devotees were in Durban now, in the Durban area, are following the principles of Krishna consciousness, not just the four regulative principles and chanting 60 rounds, but there are other principles. Rising early, only eating Krishna prasadam, regular sangha, and so forth. And they were trying to get a figure, and if I'm correct, they were saying they were trying to analyze. And the conclusion was that just because someone's initiated doesn't mean they're following, or it doesn't mean necessarily they're following strictly. And that was a concern he had. And I believe he felt that concern should be addressed. And it was just a general concern about how we can live outside and still be strong. One thing that I saw when I was in the Middle East is that the devotees had a tendency, at least on the weekends, to congregate together and chant their rounds from about 5 in the morning at the devotee's home. And they do a bhakti vriksha program there. And the nice thing that I found about bhakti vriksha, it doesn't have to be bhakti vriksha, but just any kind of regular program, the way it's organized is there's a leader of each program, and the leader becomes the counselor or the spiritual authority for the devotees. So they always had someone locally they could go to for guidance, which was nice. And of course the programs are regular, they're every week, which is also nice. So it's important when we're living outside to get that kind of guidance. And not only that we just get guidance from our guru, but of course for us we're having classes once, twice a week. And the reason I do that is so those of you who don't live in a temple, at least we'll get class once or twice a week. But as you know, when I travel I can't always do that. But in addition, having regular sangha is very important because especially as younger devotees, the association of devotees becomes more important. As you progress in devotional service, association of devotees is still, according to Shastra, it's the most important. But I would say as a younger devotee becomes more foundational, whereas an older devotee becomes the process by which you relish Krishna consciousness more in that sangha. It's very important for going more deeply into your bhakti. As a younger devotee, it's really important for stability. So, you know, we're talking about guru, and we see there's so many kinds of gurus that one can have. So many, as Prabhupada says, you can have one diksha guru, you can have unlimited numbers of siksha gurus. And as we had discussed before, not everyone that you hear from is your siksha guru per se in terms of long-term relationship. But in some sense, or or temporarily you could say he's a Siksha Guru in the sense that now you're hearing, you're getting instruction. So we do have many Siksha Gurus in ISKCON. And so it's important to be regularly associated with some kind of Sangha. Because as we all know, we're very conditioned, materially conditioned. And so the association of devotees is one of the most powerful ways to deal with that conditioning. It's strengthening. And hearing is one of the most important processes. So that's why Prabhupada set up class every day. And so we would hear regularly. So I can speak from my personal experience how you may know that those of us who are Prabhupada disciples, most of us never had much personal association, and most of the association we got was hearing Prabhupada's recorded lectures, reading his books. And I would say the average devotee who joined the movement, let's say from 73 on, only saw Prabhupada a few days a year, maybe a week a year, maybe a couple weeks. Probably never went on a morning walk, probably never went to his room for a conversation, but only heard him speak a few times personally in class. If they were fortunate and they went to the Mayapur festival, then they would hear Prabhupada speak for 5 weeks. But most of their sangha, or most of their association with Prabhupada, came through their god brothers and god sisters, hearing from them. I can say personally, and I think I can speak on behalf of others, that we felt that a sangha to be in many ways the same as Prabhupada's sangha, because everyone was representing Prabhupada, and because they were representing Prabhupada, we never saw it really as different. And I know, and I remember specifically, in some cases that the association I got with senior devotees, because it was personal and they were dealing with some of my personal problems and issues, in many ways it had a unique advantage over the association I could have with Prabhupada, because the association I had with Prabhupada was primarily general through classes. So it wasn't specifically dealing with personal issues. So I've got many good instructions from sannyasis and senior devotees that helped me tremendously. And I specifically remember that I always felt that instruction was a manifestation of Prabhupada's mercy, because it was given by his disciple, and unless Prabhupada had a disciple, I wouldn't be able to have that instruction. And unless that disciple was following Prabhupada, and unless that disciple was nourished by Prabhupada, that disciple would not be able to give me that instruction. And so I never really thought of it as separate from Prabhupada. I took it as Prabhupada, but at the same time, I saw the advantage or the value of that personal instruction given by one of his disciples. So I saw it kind of as a unified process, a simultaneously one and different process, in which the devotee instructing me was nurtured by Prabhupada. Without Prabhupada, that devotee wouldn't exist. Without Prabhupada, that devotee would not have been able, empowered, or even exist as a devotee. And so I wouldn't have gotten that instruction. So today I'm also seeing more and more how devotees are very appreciative of devotees who are able to guide them, or devotees who have specific skills in guiding another devotee, just like perhaps you're having difficulty in your marriage and there is a devotee locally that is well trained in giving guidance and they help you, and you'll appreciate it very much. The value of that sangha, the value of that instruction. And you may even be dependent on it. In a way that similarly you might be dependent on instructions of your own guru, your Diksha guru, or someone you've taken shelter of as a Siksha guru. So, as I've explained in the past, there was a time when devotees felt very strongly that all or most of their instruction must come from their Diksha guru. And that has changed, but it's changed slowly. And it existed in the early days because of a misunderstanding. And as I've said before, in some cases, it really didn't exist, but people tried to make it exist. In other words, people were finding shelter in Siksha Gurus, but were feeling that would, in some way, was unchaste. They were being unchaste to their Diksha Guru. And so they were getting benefit from many devotees, but in a sense, not appreciating it, feeling that maybe it was improper to make that kind of connection. And today, thankfully, it's not like that. And you will see that there's so many devotees that act as your gurus in some way. And Shastra says, and Prabhupada said, that every devotee is a guru. So in a sense, every devotee is our guru, and that we can learn something, because anyone you can learn from is your guru. So, you know, when we talk about the Sangha of devotees, in a sense, we're talking about the Sangha of many gurus. And as we know, when someone gives a class, at least for that time, they're acting in some capacity as a guru. So we want to learn that guru, as Prabhupada said, guru is plural. Vande Hum Sri Gurun Sri Jitapandakam. I offer obeisances to my gurus, my many gurus. So we're evolving more in ISKCON in that way. Many, many gurus. And we need them, and we need to take advantage of them. And the unfortunate situation, which may exist still in the lives of some devotees, is the feeling that I only have one guru. And I only hear from that guru, and I only come to the temple when that guru is there, and so forth. And that's unfortunate, because we need many gurus. We need much association. And of course, one may say, yes, but my guru is more knowledgeable or more insightful, or I don't get as much from hearing from others. And that may be true in some cases, or in many cases, or in all cases it may be true. But there is an advantage of Sangha which goes beyond just hearing, just being with devotees, being in the temple, being in front of the deities, taking prasadam with the devotees. Being in that Sangha, so it is important. And so it's not only just about, well, I didn't learn anything new from this Prabhu, because he's only been a devotee for 5 years, my guru's been a devotee for 4 decades. So it also goes beyond that. And one of the things that we've learned, time to get up, it's 3:30. It's time to learn how to turn off an alarm clock. We can always learn something from somebody. The Guru Nishtha says, if one lives far from the temple, would online association and attending online programs count? Yes. Not most ideal, because you might be laying in bed in your pajamas listening. So that's a good question, because that's what we're talking about. Listening and being in the association of devotees. So there's not just the advantage of listening, but there is the advantage of listening in the presence of devotees. So if you can't be present in a temple, then online hearing is also good. And the audio is fine. So Grinish still lost her audio. Okay. So that's just a little introduction, a little spontaneous introduction based on the class Maharaj gave, and I thought the points were very good about taking more association, working with some authorities who could be spiritual authorities for you in terms of service, but, and in terms of counseling. Now, sometimes there may not be a senior devotee that we have access to, or there may not be a senior devotee we actually trust. And so it could be another god brother, god sister that we confide in if we're having problems. And, you know, I was at a Vyas Puja ceremony, maybe a month, it had to be more than a month ago, because I've been gone for a month or so, Krishna Kshetra Maharaj. And what's nice about attending Vyas Puja is that you hear about the spiritual master, the particular devotee who's acting as spiritual master, You hear about his activities and you hear his instructions. And one of his instructions, which I also instruct devotees, or if you haven't heard this instruction, it's very important. He said, if you're ever having any problem, always write me. Don't allow the problem to fester. Don't allow the problem to continue. But if you're ever having any problem, always make sure to write me. And devotees sometimes say, well, I don't want to disturb you. So we can reframe that question. If you're ever having a problem, write me or contact somebody who you feel you can reveal to, discuss it with, or you feel can help you. Maybe they can't really help you, but you can discuss it, and then maybe you'll have to write me. Or maybe through discussion you'll solve the problem. Or maybe you feel that you don't want to reveal the problem to anybody, you want to write me. But you understand the principle. The principle is that we shouldn't allow any problems to fester, and we should always deal with them. So some kind of sangha is very important. Otherwise, we're fighting maya on our own, and we're not going to win on our own. We always have to fight in groups. You know, just like maybe you're in a dangerous neighborhood, but you're walking in a group of five or six, and you all have big sticks and knives, and okay, you're okay. But if you're walking alone, unless you're a martial artist, you could be attacked by a gang or a group. So it's something like that. And Prabhupada always taught that alone we're weak, together we're strong. So Alaksha says, in my case, I was living far from the temple for a long time. It was difficult for me to have good sadhu and attend the classes. But now I decided to move, living near the temple, so I'm sharing an apartment with devotees who have morning and night programs. And also, I'm working near the temple, so life has become completely different. Yes, everything is becoming easier now than before. For me, it's difficult to do things alone. So I can relate to what you're saying. And as I was saying before, that as you mature in Krishna consciousness, it becomes you become more attached to your morning program, to rising early, to chanting. It becomes something that is more impelled by your own taste. Whereas as a younger devotee, that taste is not mature, and that's why it can be a little more difficult if you don't have a morning program at your home, or you don't live near a temple. Now, I know many devotees, many married couples have morning programs beginning with Mangal Arati every day, and they have deities. And so that's also, if you live away from home, that's also important that you do regular puja. You have some kind of regulation in your home. And I think what Alaksha did is... Guru Anishta lives in a dangerous neighborhood. I stayed at her house. I'm thinking, it's not a dangerous neighborhood. She said, yes, full of maya. So yeah, that's the new, she has given the new definition of a dangerous neighborhood. Beverly Hills is a very dangerous neighborhood. No, there's not much crime in Beverly Hills. No, it's full of maya. It's more dangerous than Harlem. More dangerous than Watts. More dangerous than East LA, because there's maya everywhere. More dangerous than Mexico City at night. More dangerous than South Africa. Yeah, that's interesting. So, Laksha, thank you for your comment. It's very good. And it's a nice point, because here we're talking about sangha, the value of sangha. And we're also talking about how... And I've spoken about this before. I don't know how much of a problem this is today, but it used to be a big problem, where people were only willing to hear from their spiritual master, or maybe they would be willing to hear from a senior god brother of their spiritual master, or even senior god sister. And they were not active in the temple, but only active when their spiritual master is visiting, and after his visit, they wouldn't come much. And most senior devotees who've commented on this have made a a heavy statement. And they said that is a Kanishtha mentality. And we learned from Shastra that Kanishtha is one who sees Krishna only in the deity, but doesn't take advantage or doesn't value the association of Vaishnavas. You know, it's Krishna. Krishna is everything. Whereas the second class devotee has puts great value on the association of Vaishnavas. So if one only is dedicated to one's Diksha Guru, one only wants that association, and only wants to hear from that person, and not take guidance from others, not take advantage of all the association we can get all throughout ISKCON, or as Guru Nishtha says, online there's so much association, then that is synonymous to the definitions we get of Kanishtha Guru. Now, in this case, it's not that one is attached to the deity and not the devotee, one is attached to the Guru. So the Guru is manifestation of God, so in that sense we can see the Guru in a similar way to the deity, that I only want to be with my Guru, I don't want to be with others. And another thing that we've learned is that a devotee always sees everything as the mercy of his Guru and a manifestation. As I was saying, I saw how all my godbrothers were really just extensions of Srila Prabhupada, and I never saw them different from Prabhupada. And we as disciples are taught to see everything as a manifestation of the mercy of Guru. So all the Sangha you get and all the Siksha Gurus you get, you see them as manifestations of the mercy of your spiritual master. So you never are seeing anything separate from your spiritual master. And of course, for us in ISKCON, we see everything as a manifestation of Prabhupada's mercy. So your own Diksha Guru is a manifestation of Prabhupada's mercy. Your Siksha Guru is a manifestation of Prabhupada's mercy. So in that sense, we have this unity. And so we should never feel, well, I only want to hear from my Guru. But you should see everyone that you hear from, everyone that you associate with, in some way is a blessing or an aspect of the mercy of your Guru. Just like a disciple is supposed to think everything is the blessing of his Guru, everything is the mercy of his Guru. So that would mean all the Sangha you get is also the blessing and mercy of your Guru, and that's why you don't see it separate from him. Right? And the temple is and the Sangha, everything is happening through the mercy of Prabhupada, through the mercy of Guru, and your Dikshas, your Siksha Gurus, as it comes to you. So we don't want to see any kind of duality in Guru. And there's a famous speech Prabhupada gave at the Vyasa Puja of his spiritual master, and he said, there's no question of my Guru and your Guru, the Guru is one. And that was a very difficult thing for many devotees to understand, especially after Prabhupada left. A real distinction came about between my Guru and your Guru, because the Gurus were kind of autocrats in their own zones, in their own areas, and so when you went to one zone, it was predominated by that Guru, his instructions, his classes, his presence, and so forth. And the Prabhupada saying, there's no difference between my Guru and your Guru. But we made a real distinction in ISKCON. It may have been subtle, but it was manifested within the culture. So you know, it may have been subtle philosophically, maybe not spoken about, but within the culture it was very strong, so you felt it and you were affected by it. And so Prabhupada said, the Guru is one, and there's no difference between my Guru and your Guru. And so how do we understand that? Well, in ISKCON, it's very easy to understand because every Guru and every devotee is representing Srila Prabhupada. So in that sense, the Guru is one, and he manifests through different devotees. So you're hearing, you go to Bhagavatam class, you hear from different devotees. You may have many Siksha Gurus that you hear from. So Guru is being manifest. That one Guru is manifest because that one Guru is really, for us, it's Prabhupada, and everyone who's speaking is representing Prabhupada. So that's why we titled this class Siksha Diksha or Founder Acharya. What is the position of the Founder Acharya? Is the Founder Acharya more important than your Diksha Guru? And in a sense, the answer is yes. Is your Diksha Guru more important than the founder Acharya? In a sense, yes, because you require Diksha, and your founder Acharya is no longer alive, so he can't give you Diksha. But your Diksha Guru cannot exist without the founder Acharya, and he exists to represent the founder Acharya. And you cannot exist without other Siksha Gurus. You know, so it's like saying, what's more important, the dal, the rice, or the chapati? Well, dal, rice, and chapati make a complete protein, so they all work together. So they're all equally important because it's synergistic. You need all of them. It's you know, one without the other doesn't, you know, you have Prabhupada, but you don't have a Diksha Guru. No, Diksha is essential. And you need guidance of someone on the ground. And because you need guidance of someone on the ground, you need Diksha Guru. But you also need others on the ground who see you on a day-to-day basis, who can guide you. So you need Siksha Guru also, whether it's an official relationship or just a mentor, a counselor, someone you can call up when you're having trouble, the general sangha of devotees, the person giving the Bhagavatam class. So the Siksha, the Diksha, and the founder Acharya, you could say the most essential relationship is with the founder Acharya. And without that, we have nothing, because Prabhupada is everything for us. And that's true. Then philosophically, you could say, well, the most essential relationship is with your Diksha Guru. But you could expand that and say, well, sometimes the Siksha Guru becomes more important than the Diksha Guru. So then the most important relationship is with the Siksha Guru. But unless you're initiated, your life is not complete, your spiritual life is not complete, or it said, generally it won't be fully successful. So then you could say, well, again, I guess Diksha is the most important. So in each aspect, you could say each one in one sense is the most important, and that's transcendental mathematics, each one's the most important. And of course, we're saying they're all essentially important. So, of course, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Prabhupada, so we couldn't even talk about having a Diksha Guru or a Siksha Guru without Prabhupada. So in that sense, we say Prabhupada is foundational. He's the foundational spiritual master, because it is upon our connection with him that everything exists in our life. That we exist, that your gurus exist, that nothing would exist without him. So in that sense, yes. But the program, Prabhupada is the most important, the most foundational, but the program is not completed without Siksha and Diksha. Now you could say, well, Prabhupada has become my most prominent Siksha Guru. Okay, that's also true. Now, two out of three, but he can't be your Diksha Guru. You have to have another devotee who's your Diksha Guru. And Diksha is an essential aspect. And so your Siksha Guru becomes also of essential importance in your spiritual life. But really, I think the best way, as I'm saying, is to see this formula in terms of the sangha of devotees in general, your Siksha Guru, your Diksha Guru, and Prabhupada as a synergistic whole. And that also is how Prabhupada set up the movement. Even when he was present, he gave so much authority to temple presence, spiritual authority, and to GBC. And so most of the devotees were getting their guidance from the temple president. And they saw the temple president as the go-to person when they had problems. And it was quite, I don't know how it is today, because I haven't been a temple president for 20 years. But in the time of Prabhupada, one of the services of a temple president, one of the main services, was guidance. It was always giving guidance. Devotees had problems, they would go to him. Because you try to understand that when we had problems, it was rare we would go to Prabhupada. It was discouraged. You know, Prabhupada was busy. You'd go to your local temple president, your GBC. So the temple president was always the go-to person when you had a problem. And a very important person in your life is a person you can go to with problems, is a spiritual authority. And so, you know, we existed without being able to go to our Diksha Guru, that we existed with our Siksha Gurus. So that was how Prabhupada set it up right from the very beginning, that the Sangha of the local authority was going to be our life and soul. So in this way, we can see how the synergistic process works of Sangha. And we can see that if a devotee only wants to take instruction from his guru, his Diksha guru, and no one else, that is more of a neophyte mentality. It's understandable, because naturally, why you're attracted to someone is your Diksha guru, because you're attracted to hearing from them. And so it's not wrong that you want to hear from them. I'm not saying that. It's natural. But to only want to hear from them and never hear from anybody else, it's not the way Prabhupada set up ISKCON. He set up classes every day, given by different devotees. And we have now online Sangha, and so many great Vaishnavas. One thing we understand, aside from the siksha that you get from your siksha gurus, diksha gurus, and what we're talking here, that you can get siksha from many, is there's a relationship there. It's very close and it's very deep, and many of you work with your gurus on a regular basis. And your gurus are connecting you to Krishna. So that's there also, and that's in the background. That's always in the background. And that's never going to be minimized, even if you're not always hearing from them. And Prabhupada, also one thing we can notice is that he liked it when his disciples gave class. And he knew in every temple his disciples are giving class, and he didn't say, "You're not qualified, just play my tapes." He could have said that, but he didn't. So he really, you can say, in that sense, he emphasized this principle of hearing from senior Vaishnavas. So Laksha says, "One person told me once that some of my godbrothers were worried because I was serving more directly my siksha than my diksha guru. I became upset because of that comment, because I realized that my siksha is helping me to follow my diksha's instructions. Why those devotees who are senior devotees would say such things?" Because that's how ISKCON has been. And there's always this fear that if you're serving another siksha guru, you're being unchaste to your diksha guru. Of course, they don't know that your diksha guru is very happy that you're doing that. And they probably don't know that your siksha and diksha guru are very close and have known one another for 45 years or something. Yeah, 45 years. And it's a lack of understanding that has pervaded ISKCON. It's not their fault. It's pervaded ISKCON, and it's still, we can say, pervading in many places. Even it's pervading in some places to the degree that someone who's not initiated, if they want it, and they're aspiring for a guru and they want to change that, is highly discouraged to do that. So there's still a ways to go. Now, in some places, this is less of a problem. In the minds of some leaders, it's more of a problem. In some leaders, it's less of a problem. But, you know, in some cases, there may be valid reasons for that. That sometimes a person may be actually trying to avoid the instructions of their Diksha Guru by taking Seltzer Siksha Guru. So the motive may be improper. So in that case, I think there's valid concerns. That maybe one is looking for shelter of someone who is perhaps not as strict, or will not tell them, instruct them to do things that their Diksha Guru is asking them to do, and maybe they're using it as some form of excuse to not follow. So in that case, there should be concern. But otherwise, if one has the blessings of their Diksha Guru to take shelter of Siksha Guru, why? No one has a right to discourage one. It's fully blessed. And we can say that in general, we all have blessings to take shelter of anybody. You know, as I've said before, there are many devotees who have a very, very deep relationship with Srila Prabhupada. And that's where they're getting their main guidance. And they're initiated by one of Prabhupada's disciples, but their main guidance, their main inspiration at this point in their spiritual life is coming from Srila Prabhupada. And therefore, one could say the same thing that someone said to you, that that's not good. And indeed, in the earlier days of ISKCON, that would be said because you would be seen, it would be seen that perhaps you're neglecting your Diksha Guru and you're so focused on Prabhupada. No. So as we said earlier, a disciple always thinks everything is the mercy of his Diksha Guru and is eternally indebted and grateful. And there's no question of ever breaking that relationship. But at different times, one may find the siksha of others to be especially beneficial. And so it's quite common that as one ages in devotional service, one becomes more and more attached to reading Prabhupada's books, to hearing Prabhupada's lectures. And you'll see a phenomenon that younger devotees listen less to Prabhupada's lectures, perhaps not listen at all. But you'll find people who've been devotees 20, 30, 40 years, they'll tend to listen more than devotees, younger devotees. And it's important that we should, Prabhupada's our founder acharya, so we should take advantage of that. But early on, after Prabhupada left, even some people might be accused of being unchaste to their guru if they were listening only to Prabhupada lectures. The people would say, there was something wrong with you. You should be listening to your spiritual master. You need to know what he's teaching you. You're being perhaps unchaste. But actually, it's impossible not to be in connection with your spiritual master on some regular basis. It's not likely that that would happen. So, is there anything wrong with that? Of course not. No devotee in their right mind would say that there's something wrong with focusing on listening to Prabhupada. Only if you do that and you avoid the sangha of devotees. Then anytime you don't want to hear from any. I only hear from Prabhupada. I don't want to hear from anyone else. So that's kind of what the mood of the Ritviks is, more like that. It's a kind of Prabhupada fanaticism which eliminates everybody else from your life, from having any deep influence on you. So we don't want to do that. But Lakshya, if someone says that to you, it's likely because that's what was taught after Prabhupada left, and perhaps there haven't been enough discussions and classes on this topic, and still their misunderstanding. And you know, in a sense, we say the more the merrier, you know. Well, you can have lots of gurus. Prabhupada said you can only have one Diksha Guru, but you can have unlimited numbers of Siksha Gurus. So we say the more the merrier. Right? Now, in some cases people actually have two Diksha Gurus because they go from one Sampradaya to another, like from the Sri Sampradaya to the Gaudiya Sampradaya. And they want to become initiated into the Gaudiya Sampradaya because they want to become part of that family. They want to get adopted, so to speak. So in that sense, there are occasions when someone has had two Diksha Gurus to get Diksha within another Vaishnava line. But that's an exception. So the general rule is you have one Diksha Guru. But you can have many, many Siksha Gurus. And there's no problem with having many Siksha Gurus. The only problem would be is if those Siksha Gurus were in some way deviating you from your dedication and service and chastity to your spiritual master, or in some way influencing you to work outside of Prabhupada's movement, or in some way interpreting Prabhupada's instructions. Now, 2 days ago I had a very, very very unpleasant experience. And I was Googling something. You know how when you Google one thing, you see something else. And I don't know what I was Googling, but yeah, I think I was Googling Mahatma Das Live because I wanted to see if I had some live kirtans on Google because Bella needed some for a video. And then it had an interview. It said, Mahatma Das, why I don't leave ISKCON? And I don't even remember where that interview was from. I have no idea. I think it was maybe I don't know. I can't remember. It's probably a year ago. And then in the Google searches, there was another one, why I leave ISKCON. You know, so there are many of these interviews, why you don't leave ISKCON. And there's another one, why I leave ISKCON. And it was a sannyasi, a British sannyasi, who had become part of the Gaudiya Mutt. You know, and explaining why, I guess, he left ISKCON, or why, in general, it's okay to leave ISKCON. Anyway, he said a couple of things which were very disturbing to me, because he had heard them from his guru. And I don't want to tell you what he said, because it'll disturb you also. But I would just like to tell you that what he said was in direct contradiction to the very words of Srila Prabhupada, and that's why it upset me. And he was speaking to an audience of obviously people who had faith in him and were submissively listening to him. So that's not a siksha guru. If you take shelter of someone who is not representing Prabhupada as Prabhupada represented himself, but representing a Prabhupada that has been filtered through interpretations of those who are not in ISKCON. And that's not a problem if the interpretations are properly representing Prabhupada. I'm not saying that if you hear from someone outside of ISKCON who is a devoted follower of Prabhupada and understands Prabhupada well, and you hear from them, that you won't understand Prabhupada. I'm saying this person, he said things which blatantly misrepresented Prabhupada. And Prabhupada did not say those things. He said the opposite of what Prabhupada said. Then, of course, that should be rejected. But if a person is representing Prabhupada, and if he is representing Prabhupada, then you could say things equal to the same thing or equal to one another, then he's representing your guru also. So it just requires a deeper understanding. Rather, I would say, Lakshya, that if you're finding shelter and guidance and inspiration by taking shelter of a siksha guru, then your godbrothers and godsisters of your diksha guru should be happy. That's actually how we should see it. I mean, if you're advancing in Krishna consciousness, you're staying with ISKCON, you're inspired to serve Prabhupada, then everyone should be happy. It doesn't matter if you're advancing through this devotee or that devotee. If you're advancing, people should be happy. And certainly they should be happy because your own diksha guru is happy. So this is an interesting point here. This is a very interesting point. But sometimes I've seen that someone may not be happy with a devotee's actions, when in fact their spiritual master is happy. And this is more common, I think, with my godbrothers and godsisters, that sometimes we might be critical of one another, but our actions may in fact be pleasing to Prabhupada. And so it's a real contradiction in that sense, that we should try to minimize anyone who may be, whose service and whose attitude may be pleasing to Prabhupada, even though perhaps we think it isn't. So you have to be careful that if you're pleasing your spiritual master, then your godbrothers and godsisters should be happy. And he's happy with what you're doing. There's no doubt. And every spiritual master is happy if their disciples have shelter, have more shelter and more guidance, have more help, let's say, we use that word. Let's say, every spiritual master is happy if their disciples are being helped on a local level. Because just like I'm here now in South Africa, and then I will go to Argentina, and then maybe in March we'll come to Mexico, and then maybe in the summer I'll come to Mexico. So if you add up my time in Mexico, maybe, you know, maybe at this point it's been about 1 month a year. That's not a lot. So of course it's nice when I'm there and we get to be together, and we get to talk, and we get to meet, and so on. But there's 11 months of the year that I'm not there. And of course, we do online classes twice a week. Specifically, there may be things that you're dealing with, personal things, that And if you have somebody on a local level that can help you, don't you think your spiritual master is happy? Or you have someone you can go to online and ask a question and get some guidance, don't you think your spiritual master is happy? Of course he is. And just on a practical level, it makes it easier for him. Your spiritual master has thousands of disciples. So to have a godbrother that can assist him in guiding other disciples is something that he appreciates very much. And if he appreciates, specifically, if he appreciates that particular devotee that's giving guidance to his disciples, then it's double appreciation. And if he likes that devotee, if he trusts that devotee. So we should understand that. It's you see, we have to understand that it's not your guru and my guru. We're in one family. You know, it's the uncles, it's the aunts, it's the cousins, it's the brothers, it's the sisters. And if we go back to that point where I was saying that it's not, as Prabhupada says, not a question of my guru or your guru. The guru is one because the mission of the guru is one. The guru is representing one teaching. The guru in ISKCON is representing Prabhupada. The guru is the representative of Nityananda, also the representative of Radharani, also the representative of Krishna. So in that sense, we say oneness because we're representing the same person, just like a sales rep for a company is one. They're all representing the company. And they're all selling the same product. So they may be individuals, but they're one in the sense of the product, the company, and like that. It just requires a broader understanding that we shouldn't make distinctions, because that's not our philosophy. And it's not healthy either. And it's because anything that you do that is not philosophically sound, it's not healthy. Because everything we do has to be based on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And when it's not, we run into problems. And so we've discussed in these classes the problems that ISKCON faced in the early days, because we didn't well understand what our Shastra was teaching about Diksha Guru, Siksha Guru. And we created problems. So the more we're aligned with Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru, the less problems we'll have. And so if people discourage you, it just means that they haven't clearly understood yet the position of Siksha Guru. At least that's the way I see it. And I'm not faulting them. I'm just saying that this misunderstanding has been pervasive in the past, and it still pervades some areas to some degree, or it still pervades the understanding of some devotees to some degree. And so more education is required. Just like our godbrother Sreshwar, he's traveling and he's doing I believe it's a 30-hour workshop called Srila Prabhupada, Our Founder Acharya. And so in the course, he deals with this topic. And the reason he's doing it is because there's a need for this, because this misunderstanding still exists. And so I speak to him a lot about the course and specifically how it's affecting devotees. And he said that it's having an extremely positive effect because it's creating more of this unity. And it's solving the problems that could be created from this soul exclusive connectivity to Diksha Guru above and beyond everyone else. And bringing the focus back to Prabhupada, because he said his realization has been, when you bring that focus to Prabhupada, then everything else falls into place. So the problem of, well, he's your Diksha Guru and he's your Siksha Guru, so why are you serving him? He said that resolves itself when Prabhupada is central. Because Prabhupada is central, then everybody sees their connection with Prabhupada. And then when we see our connection through Prabhupada, then you see the equality of your Siksha and Diksha Guru in relation to Prabhupada. And another interesting thing he said was that in areas where they had some relationship issues on the managerial level, he said it helped solve those problems. And I said, how is that? He said, because they saw their common unity through Prabhupada. He said there were factions. Factions were creating problems, but when they saw more of their common unity is with Prabhupada as everyone's Siksha Guru and everyone's Founder Acharya, so it solves it solved a lot of those relationship issues. So I think that that's very important. You know, I mean, like, we can give courses on how to work together, how to cooperate better, but I think this is extremely valuable point, because if we don't get it together with understanding Prabhupada's central position, then sectarianism over so many things, not just guru, but it could be over ashram, over ethnic groups and so on, gender. You know, there's always that tendency to discriminate based on anything you can discriminate, anything you can find upon which to discriminate, we discriminate. Well, those are the older devotees, we're the younger, so now there's a difference. We don't see eye to eye. Well, those are the women, we're the men, there's a difference. Well, those are grihasas, we're the brahmacharis. Any way you can discriminate has the potential to create factions, criticism, lack of unity. So, keeping Prabhupada in the center is the unifying force. And they were all connected through Prabhupada. And then it's not about my guru, your guru, it's about all of us serving together, being guided by Prabhupada, and that's what is going to keep ISKCON together. So, you know, just this statement, which seems innocent on their part, why are you serving your Siksha Guru, you should be serving your Diksha Guru, has within it the misunderstanding of Prabhupada's position as the everyone's founder Acharya, I think. I mean, it may be subtle, and they may not even be aware of it, but it does have that connotation within it. And so we need, and that's why Sureshwar is teaching those courses to help devotees overcome that. So, and overcome it by understanding Prabhupada's position as everyone's. Every one of us has this foundational relationship. He's our Siksha Guru, he's the founder of Tribe ISKCON, everything in our lives works on the basis of his instruction and his guidance. And this is where all of us ultimately are getting our life, as it comes through any guru to us. It's coming from Prabhupada, through the whole disciplic succession, through Prabhupada to us. So, it's now my time, it's 4:06 a.m., which means shortly I will be going to Mangal Arati. So I want to stop here and ask if you have any questions, or anything you don't understand, or any comment you would like to make, any realization you have, or anything that needs to be clarified, or any doubt you might have, or any, you know, okay, here's the point, that becoming attached to Prabhupada, becoming attached to another devotee, should only enhance your relationship with your Diksha Guru. It shouldn't in any way undermine it. And so, the devotee or devotees who made that statement are fearing that a relationship with your Siksha Guru would in some way undermine relationship with your Diksha Guru, where your realization is it actually strengthens your Krishna consciousness. So if your Krishna consciousness is strengthened, that will naturally strengthen your connection with your Diksha Guru. It's not going to happen any other way. It's not that you're going to become stronger in Krishna consciousness, and as a result, your relationship your Diksha Guru is going to become weakened. That anything in a healthy environment, anything that strengthens your relation, anything that strengthens your Krishna consciousness, any way you get it, will strengthen your relationship with your Diksha Guru. I think we should not be afraid that it would undermine it. And it is said that the Siksha Guru should be a representative of the Diksha Guru, should always support. And in ISKCON, that's not really an issue, because we're all disciples of Prabhupada and we're all representing Prabhupada. So your Siksha and Diksha Gurus, they're all on the same page because they're all representing Prabhupada. Now, we may represent with nuances in different ways, but in general, there's obvious oneness there. And so strengthening a relationship with your Diksha Guru would strengthen it with your Siksha Guru, would strengthen it with Prabhupada. Strengthening with your Siksha Guru would strengthen it with Prabhupada and your Diksha Guru. Strengthening with Prabhupada would strengthen with your Diksha and Siksha. In a healthy environment, it won't happen any other way. And if someone is fearful that it would happen any other way, then it's really important that they understand Prabhupada's central position, or you may want, if it's appropriate, let them listen to this class. Because these things are very important to understand. If we want to have a unified movement, we need to understand these things, otherwise we create sects. Even amongst one guru and their disciples, you could create sections. Anyway, so I think that's good. I'll just wait a few moments to see if you have anything else to add or say, or doubts you have, questions, clarifications. I think it's pretty clear, so that's why you're all silent right now. And since you're silent, I guess that's indication we can end class. Yes? And then I can get ready. Yes. It's an interesting topic, yes. Okay, I would like to end. I would like to end this class by saying that all of you who are listening to this class, which means those of you who are present now and those of you who will hear the recording of this, this is these topics we're talking about are very important. All of these classes are very important because the unity of ISKCON rests in many ways on understanding Prabhupada's position and the consequences of understanding his position. And therefore I would suggest that where appropriate that you educate other devotees or discuss with other devotees you discuss this topic I was just reading that's why I stopped and you discuss this topic with other devotees whenever appropriate, because it's very, very important. So as you know, Kamalaksha, you can get it on YouTube, or you can, on Guru Nishtha, maybe you can give the link. You can put the link in there. Everything that I record goes on YouTube. We're working on our new website, and on our new website, every class I give will go up on the homepage. So you'll see the succession of the last two or three courses. Classes I've given, they'll be right there, so you can download. You don't have to go anywhere. They'll be right on the website. Yes, every one of these classes is recorded. Every single one of these is recorded. This is number 12. And the average length of these courses was about an hour and a half to 2 hours. So we're probably up to about 20 hours on this topic. So, yeah, so go there and then... what is that? I think you may have to scroll down because on YouTube there are many topics, but that's my page. Yeah, we're having these classes transcribed, and then again once I can give you the transcriptions, we could start translating into Spanish. So listen to the classes. It's a very, very important topic. As you know, I pick topics which I think are of extreme relevance and importance in our spiritual lives. And so, and I give a lot of thought in terms of the practicality, meaning how this is affecting us, how these topics affect our spiritual lives in ISKCON today. So when you listen to them, when you understand them, often what you'll find is that I pick topics and I discuss things that are not always well understood by many devotees in ISKCON, and so you can do a great service where the opportunity exists in educating devotees in what you've understood on these topics. Because a lot of what I talk about are dealing with commonly misunderstood topics, or perhaps just tweaking them, giving more clarity to them, and so you can be of great service to the devotee community when you find that maybe you've understood something from me that's not as well understood where you live in your temple or your city as it should be, as it would need to be to create a healthier environment, and then you can offer what you've understood. Yeah. So that's basically what I've been doing the last few years, maybe you could say the last 5-6 years, I tend to isolate topics that I think need to be addressing, or need, either they need to be addressed, or the topics which are misunderstood in some way, and I like to clarify them, or just topics that are important and trying to go very deeply into the essence of them. And those of you who are listening to these classes can serve your communities. Of course, you know, they have to be willing to allow you the facility to do that, but if that's not there, just in your own relationships, one-on-one, share what you're learning. And sharing what you're learning is very good also for your own education. And when you try to share it, also reveals whether you've understood it, because you can't explain something you haven't understood. And so you'll see how well you've understood, and you may have to go back and listen again to get clear. And like Alaksha says, that you like more people to watch these videos or hear the audio. That's why I record them. Most people do not attend my classes, but they listen online, because when I travel, people tell me that. And I make these classes available on CD, and on my new website, they'll be more easily accessible, all the classes. So that's just a service I've taken up to address issues that I feel are important and maybe misunderstood, or just important to understand more deeply. And so you can share that with the devotee community in general, what you know, or as Laksha says, you can also send them the links. So if you feel anything's important for a particular person, you may want to send them a link. Say, you know, listen to this, see what you think. It's important. You may even want to send a link to a temple authority if you feel that there's some misunderstanding in the temple, it needs to be clarified, and see what they think. Hopefully it will help them. So I'm going to go now. We have a Japa workshop on ISKCON Desire Tree, and we're putting a link on our website. Maybe it's up there now. I just became aware that the Japa workshop I did in October in Govardhan Eco Village outside of Mumbai was recorded, and it was well recorded, and the sound is very good. It's a condensed workshop because we had less time. I think we had maybe 5-6 hours less. I got to the essence, so it's not as in-depth, but it's definitely sufficiently covers the essential points. So that's something good. And next week I'm going to Cape Town, and Kush lives in Cape Town, and we're going to work on putting the official online version together, which is more of an official course, you know, more than just lectures that you watch. It's involving you in doing work. So that's going to be good. So I'm going to go now. And as far as today, the next class, which won't be on Saturday, because that is not going to work, I think we will be able to do Tuesday night's class. It just means I do it at 3 a.m. in the morning. So as long as I don't stay up too late, it's okay. Or as long as I get a little nap the afternoon before, I'm normally okay, which I did yesterday, because I went to bed about 9:45 last night and got up about 2:30. But it's okay because I rested in the afternoon. So I think these classes are important, and I don't like missing them, so I don't mind getting up. And a lot of times I'm up this time anyway, so I think it's very important, and I think it's very important that you share this with others, as Sureshwar is realizing that sharing Prabhupada and his central position with others is one of the most important services we have now in ISKCON, in terms of unifying our movement and eliminating some misconceptions about Guru Tattva. So whatever you can do in this regard to share what you've learned, and I'll work on getting the transcriptions done in Spanish. We have 2 transcriptions. What I need to do is go and edit the transcription, and then when it's edited, then you can do it in Spanish. And it'll be very useful. So thank you, and let's assume, Guru Nishtha, assume that we will give class the next Tuesday night, and you can just check with me on Monday to confirm that. But if for some reason we don't connect because of my traveling schedule, or I don't know what internet connections will be there where I'm going to Cape Town, just assume that's going to happen. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gopremanandi, Hari Hari Gaur, we'll see you next time.